Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast.
I came across Chef Francis Mallmann probably about 3 years ago now on the first season of Chef's Table on Netflix, and was really enamored with his personality and his career. The episode itself, which is a brief introduction into his life, how he travels, where he lives, his kind of secret hideaway on Patagonia Island, or on this island in Patagonia. It's a very romantic episode, I would say. And one of the things is that I admire Mallmann from the aspect of how he has chosen to live his life and forge his own path and go his own way and do what his heart is telling him to do. And he's had great success in his career. Most people, like in the U.S., have never heard of him, although he does have a couple of fantastic restaurants in the United States, one being at the Fiana District in the Fiana Hotel in Miami. And I've had an opportunity to meet him on a couple of occasions. Extraordinary human being. He introduced me when I found something very kind of enticing as I was watching this episode. He introduced me to a couple of poems in the episode that I then looked up, got the books that they were written in, and have used them in teaching a few times over the years. And I wanted to bring it to the podcast because I think that it's number one, the poems are really cool. I think there is something about them that taps into the inner spirit of the human being and our journey in life and what it should be versus how it is for so many. How do we tap into the inner part of ourself that is calling out for adventure, that's calling out for new experiences, that's calling out for, you know, the lust of life itself, to really feel it and breathe it in the depth of our soul. And I think that that has kind of become the essence of the way Mallmann himself lives. So I'm going to give you this quote on him, and then I want to go through this poem. I'm going to give it a read through once, and then I'm going to kind of break it down by stanza and teach a little bit around what's actually being said here. So this is a quote by Francis Mallmann. "You don't grow on a secure path. All of us should conquer something in life, and it needs a lot of work, and it needs a lot of risk. In order to grow and to improve, you have to be there a bit at the edge of uncertainty." And I happen to completely agree with that. He talks about in the Netflix episode that his life has been a bit on the edge of uncertainty. He left home as a young teenager to really go out and begin to explore what his interests were and find himself and to find his path. And what's interesting is that all of the time that he spent from a teenager until about 40 years old was leading him to a very specific point in time when something happened where he literally found his specific path. Like all of the things that he learned that were somewhat random events, but, you know, basically created by the direction that he was going, finally came to an ultimate meaning for him about the age of 40 when he had to make a decision as to whether he was going to pursue the traditional path of a chef who had accomplished the greatness, so to speak, that he accomplished at that time, or was he going to go forge something different? And this is the part for me that I think became so very interesting and kind of like a mirror quality to my life and so many people that I've studied and worked with over the years. He won a great competition in Europe, and winning that competition was an amazing thing, because what it did was it put him on the same level as all of his mentors and all of his teachers. And he was asked to provide this dinner, this French dinner, for the owners of Cartier Jewelry. And at the end of the dinner, and again, this was a French dinner. Malman was a French trained chef. The owner grabbed him and took him aside, and he said, "Mr. Malman, this meal was horrible, and I want to tell you this not to be mean to you or to degrade you in any way, but in an act of kindness, because I see that you work very hard and you're putting a lot of love and work into what you do. But this is not French food, and you need to do something about this." So he went away from this experience with, like, probably like most people would, with the idea of completely disagreeing with the person, but it something about the conversation had a heaviness to it. And what he realized over a short period of time was that that gentleman was absolutely correct. And what Francis found himself doing was that he was basically becoming a copy of the teachers that taught him, and he was not forging his own path in life. So from that moment on, he began to take the things that meant something to his soul as an individual and then begin to forge that path in his cooking. He has been he's in his late 70s now, I believe, and he's been a celebrity chef, so to speak, in Latin America for, I think they said 20 or 30 years. So he's a pretty big deal, even though most people in the U.S., are not familiar with him. But he introduced me to this poem. It's called The Call of the Wild. It was written by Robert Williams Service. And I think that it really speaks to the desire of the human soul to be free and to experience. So without any further ado, let me get into this thing and judge for yourself. Like, see where this poem touches you and what it does for you. Have you gazed on the naked grandeur where there's nothing else to gaze on? Set pieces and drop curtain scenes galore. Big mountains heave to heaven, which the blinding sun blazons. Black canyons where the rapids rip and roar. Have you swept the vision valley with the green stream streaking through it? Searched the vastness for a something you have lost? Have you strung your soul to silence? Then for God's sake, go and do it. Hear the challenge, learn the lesson, pay the cost. Have you wandered in the wilderness, the sagebrush desolation, the bunch grass levels where the cattle graze? Have you whistled bits of ragtime at the end of all creation and learned to know the desert's little ways? Have you camped upon the foothills? Have you galloped over ranges? Have you roamed the arid sunlands through and through? Have you chummed up with the mesa? Do you know its moods and changes? Then listen to the wild. It's calling you. Have you known the great white silence, not a snow gem twig a quiver, eternal truths that shame our soothing lies? Have you broken trail on snowshoes, musked your huskies up the river, dared the unknown, led the way, and clutched the prize? Have you mapped the Have you marked the map's void spaces, mingled with the mongled races, felt the savage strength of brute in every through? And through grim as hell, the worst is, can you round it off with curses, then hearken to the wild, it's wanting you? Have you suffered, starved, and triumphed, groveled down, yet grasped at glory, grown bigger in the bigness of the whole? Done things just for the doing, let babblers tell their story. See through the nice veneer the naked soul. Have you seen God in his splendors, heard the text that nature renders? You'll never hear it in the family pew. The simple things, the true things, the silent men who do things, then listen to the wild. It's calling you. They have cradled you in custom. They have primed you with their preaching. They have soaked you in convention through and through. They have put you in a showcase. You're a credit to their teaching. But can't you hear the wild? It's calling you. Let us probe the silent places. Let us seek what luck betides us. Let us journey to a lonely land I know. There's a whisper on the night wind. There's a star agleam to guide us. And the wild is calling, calling, let us go. I think that that is just absolutely beautiful. And it's really a story. I think about the life experience, you know, the richness that is life that so many people do not experience. And I think Robert Williams Service is really trying to touch on the idea here that we're not living. We're absolutely not living. And he goes into actually why that is. So let's break this thing down here. He says, it starts off like this. It's basically a question. Have you gazed on naked grandeur where there's nothing else to gaze on? Set pieces and drop curtain scenes galore. Big mountains heave to heaven, which the blinding sunsets blaze in. Black canyons where the rapids rip and roar. So he's giving us this idea of, like, have you done anything? Have you, with whatever your life is, there is this, there's this grandeur that's out there. And he's kind of giving us an idea that, here it is. It's out there. It's really big. And it's almost done in a way of like hitting you right between the eyes with the very first stanza of the poem and allowing your mind to try to use it as a comparison to what your own life actually is. He says, black canyons where the rapids rip and roar. Have you swept the vision valley with the green streams streaking through it? Search the vastness for a something you have lost. Have you strung your soul to silence? Then for God's sakes, go and do it. Hear the challenge, learn the lesson, pay the cost. That's very important, what he's saying here. So he goes into a specific. He says, have you swept the visioned valley with the green stream streaking through it? You know, the vision valley could be anything. It could be the vision of our mind, the vision of our soul, the vision for our life. And the green stream streaking through it is kind of like there's this guide, there's this richness to this that we can follow. Then he says, have you searched the vastness for something you have lost? I think, at least what this means to me, this part here, is that for most of us, like from the very moment that we're born and we're starting to be raised by other people, we begin to become distanced from ourselves. We begin to become distanced from our purpose of why we're here. And it becomes this, our life becomes this vast picture, if you will, of whatever somebody else told us it should be. And you see people, it's interesting, like they look, they search, they ask questions, and life itself becomes very expansive in that moment, meaning that it's almost so big in the context of what it is that we're looking for that we can't find it because of that vastness. But then he gives us a clue. He says, have you strung your soul to silence? In other words, have you gone into the quietness of yourself where all you can hear is where the truth speaks inside of you, where it's talking to you specifically as an individual soul with something here to offer, something here to experience. He gives a sense of urgency after that. He says, then for God's sakes, go and do it. Hear the challenge, learn the lesson, pay the cost. So the challenge becomes, what are you going to do with your life? What are the lessons that you, up to that point where he then says, pay the cost, he says, learn the lesson, pay the cost. Learn the lesson is that you've been separated from this higher side of yourself and what your ultimate destiny is for you. And then pay the cost. Like, he doesn't say maybe pay the cost. He doesn't bring us in gently here. It's pay the cost. Like, there's no other option in the author's mind here other than if you're going to find the side of you, the part of you that can have this experience that he gives us in the opening statement of the poem, you're going to have to pay the cost. There is no other way to do it. However, he doesn't tell us what the cost is, and that's very different for every person. But here's what we do know. The cost is that we have to turn our back on the past. If you go and you watch the Malman episode, you see that he pretty much lives in a way where he's consistently turning away from the past. Once his soul is no longer connected to an experience, he walks away from it. His children in the episode talk about how they fell in love with one of his restaurants, and the restaurant was there for 15 or 20 years or something, but Malman was no longer connected to it, so he had to walk away from it. But the kids had an emotion around it. They had experience. They had great memories. And he speaks directly to the idea that he can't keep something open and moving just because somebody's become emotionally attached to it, that he needs to go on and continue to live his life. So in the second verse here, he says, have you wandered in the wilderness, the sagebrush desolation, the bunch grass levels where the cattle graze? Have you whistled bits of ragtime at the end of all creation and learned to know the desert's little ways? So again, he does this, he goes to these different extremes. It's like the swing of a pendulum. He's talking about, again, a grandeur of the wilderness, the desolation of certain areas, but that there's something there for us in that desolation. And then kind of like the joy and the comedic folly, if you will, of just going out and experiencing whatever it is that life, you know, has to offer us, with a carefreeness to it. Like, have you whistled bits of ragtime at the end of all creation? Right, like, I get this vision of somebody like skipping through the vastness of experience with the carefreeness of, let me just experience whatever I'm here to experience. And then he goes back into the specific again and learn to know the desert's little ways. So that what he's really saying is that in each one of these experiences, there are these little bits of information, these little bits of truth that are constantly nudging us forward, giving us more information, encouraging us to continue to move down a specific path of exploration and experience in our life. He says, have you camped upon the foothills? Have you galloped over ranges? Have you roamed the arid sunlands through and through? Have you chummed up with the mesa? Do you know its moods and changes? And again, he's going from the grand to the specific. And this is a theme throughout the entire poem about opening us up to the grand, but then each grandeur has something specific to teach us. And he ends it by saying this, then listen to the wild, it's calling you. So the wild can be representative of any experience that we want to have, whether you're an entrepreneur and you're starting a business or you're doing something to change the world, whatever the wild is for you, it's something outside of us. It's the adventure of life. And that adventure is calling us. It's constantly calling us to move toward it. He goes back in and says, have you known the great white silence, not a snow gem twig a quiver? So if you've ever been somewhere where you've just had a really big snowfall, and then after the snow is done, it is that total, complete, peaceful silence. Basically, the snow is absorbing all the sound in the area, and you're almost able to take in another worldly type of information in a situation like that. You have the beauty of it, you have the stillness of it, and you have this silence. And when we go into that kind of a silence, we can hear things that we've never heard before, whether it's coming from inside of us or it's something that we're receiving. That stillness, that silence is where there's a truth for us to hear. And you know, generally we don't, because we have so much internal chatter going on, and then we're in places where there's a lot of chatter, which kind of explains the next sentence here. And if you were reading this, it's put in parentheses. He said, eternal truths that shame are soothing lies. So when you're in that silence, it's kind of like you could choose not to hear it, but there's an eternal truth that is just making itself present for each person, but it's immovable. It's not something that's going to go away. It's completely immovable. And what it causes us to be face to face with is the lies that we tell ourselves that keep ourselves calm and safe in the world. But deep down in our heart of hearts, even for the most learned person, I think there's part of everybody that knows that those lies are not true, that there's something else. Yes, many people turn from that in their life, but if you were to really dig down with a person, you'll find that there's an inner knowing there. And I think that's what service is saying here, is that that's true, that internal knowing is true for every person. And when we get into a place of grandeur, you know, like I picture, like if you're standing at the edge of the Grand Canyon and you're really seeing the grandeur of that, in this case, he's talking about, you know, the great white silence, maybe like being out somewhere in Montana or Wyoming, and it's snowpack as far as you can see. It's fresh, and it's extraordinarily quiet. It's almost overwhelming in the size and scope of it. It really devours anything that we believe or we've made up or have been told that keeps us safe. So then he gets us moving again, okay? Have you broken trail on snowshoes, mustered your huskies up the river, dared the unknown, led the way, and clutched the prize? Now it's adventure, it's risk, it is willingness to go into the unknown. So dared the unknown, dared it. meaning that, like, throw whatever you have at me. I can handle it. I will learn. I will adapt. Led the way, meaning that very few people do this. Very few people ever take this kind of a posture in their life where they're going to run into the unknown headlong with an inner knowing that there's something there for them, but they couldn't tell you exactly what's going to come out the other side. And then in that moment of experience, they clutch the prize. The prize is not the destination. The prize is the experience itself. Now listen to what he says here. Have you marked the map's void spaces? Meaning that there's the unknown, and then there's the unknown of the unknown, and that's both internal and external. So we have the intellectual unknown of the world, where common agreement says things are unknown, but then we also have the unknown that nobody really knows about, and very few people are willing to enter. Mingled with the mongrel races, you know, having experience with things that are not necessarily common, maybe things that are judged, maybe things that are not popular, being willing to explore also internally those sides of yourself there. You'll find that there's also an internal sexuality that flows through this from an exploratory perspective and also a driven perspective in order to experience. He says, felt the savage strength of brute in every through, and through grim as hell the worst is, can you round it off with curses, then hearken to the wild, it's wanting you. No matter what goes wrong, can you basically say, fuck off? Right? You know, no matter what the world throws at you that is hurting, that's a tragedy, that's a mistake, that's an error, that is a betrayal, it is a backstab, whatever it is, and really look at it and say, fuck you, I'm going this way regardless, right? There's nothing that's going to stop me, because that internal essence of ourselves that is seeking that fuller expression is consistently wanting us to move forward. Nature, the universe, spirit, whatever you call it, then hearken to the wild, it's wanting you. It's wanting you to step into it, to will it, to experience it, to bring your desire to the surface. Now he starts to go in a little bit of a turn here. He starts to go a little darker. Have you suffered, starved, and triumphed, groveled down, yet grasped at glory? It's so interesting. He brings us into these places that are so very true, because any person that's ever taken any endeavor whatsoever has been in the suffered, the starved, and the groveled down places, yet triumphed. So that is the difficulty, that is the struggle, that is the mistake, the error, the regrouping of whatever it is, and the starting over. It is suffering the loss of things in life. But then at the end, the person grasps at glory, because none of those things stopped them. The next sentence, grown bigger in the bigness of the whole. So because we're going out into this glory, into this grandeur, and we've suffered, we've starved, we've triumphed, we've beaten back our own demons, we've slayed the dragon, so to speak, we've grown bigger in that bigness of the whole. And there's no getting there. He keeps reminding us of that. There's this bigger than life, bigger than us is an individual aspect of this. He said, done things just for the doing, letting babblers tell the story. In other words, whatever you want, do it. And let the people who are going to gossip about you gossip about you. They're going to say shit about you whether you do something or you don't do something. So you might as well go do it. And the other thing is that he says, done things just for the doing. In other words, you don't even need a reason to break the rules. Just go break them. Just go experience. Just go have the experience. See through the nice veneer, the naked soul. It's actually seeing through the nice veneer, the naked soul. That's tearing down the mask that everybody wears and really seeing the essence of truth, both inside ourselves, inside other people, and in life itself. Because there's also that sexuality piece there, the savageness, the rawness, the urge of life seeking fuller expression within the idea. He says, have you seen God in his splendors, heard the text that nature renders? The other thing that is, I think, prevalent in the words that he chooses here is that you can it can build a picture. I think it does build a picture in your mind. There's a beauty about this. He takes us back and forth in this journey that there is a cost, there is a sacrifice in order to experience life at its fullest. And if are we really looking at that bigness of the splendor and then hearing the message, right? But he does this switch. He says, have you seen God in his splendors? Then it's comma, heard the text that nature renders. So he goes from, it's interesting, he goes from the unseen to the seen. He goes from the all to the finite. And understanding that God is in the nature and that in the nature it speaks to us the message. Like the message is coming through the physical, but from God. And then the very next phrase, he says, you'll never hear it in the family pew. So the sentence before that, have you seen God in his splendors, heard the text that nature renders, is basically the truth. Have you heard the truth that this journey, this decision, this grandeur offers? Have you heard it? Because you're never going to hear it in the family pew. The family pew is about safety and is about staying the same. He says the simple things, the true things, the silent men who do things, then listen to the wild, it's calling you. The simple things, the true things, the silent men who do things. In other words, not only is it in the grandeur, but it's everywhere. It's in the simple things. It's in the true things. It's in the people who don't talk about the things that they do. But you can see it in their vibration. You can see it in their faces. You can tell just by their attitude in life. It's very interesting about aware people. Aware people don't need to run around and tell everybody else that they're aware. You know they're aware because you understand awareness. And there's no defensiveness with it either. There's no resistant. They'll be just who they are, and they don't care, nor do they think about what you think about them. He goes on to say, they, meaning parents, society, media, religion, all different things, meaning they, have cradled you in custom. They have primed you with their preaching. So they've kept you safe in their customs and their traditions. There's nothing about them that is, again, expansive, exploratory, going out there and living the adventure of life. They've primed you with their preaching, which is basically that they've primed you to stay in the same damn place, not to actually go out and experience what you want. They have soaked you in convention through and through. Now, that's an interesting word, right? They've soaked you. When you think of something that's soaked, it like soaked to the bone, like you're completely saturated with an idea or a way of being. He said, they put you in a showcase. You're a credit to their teaching. Great. Here's all the things that you've been taught. Here's the way to stay safe. Look at, you know, if you think about our parents, look at this, this son or daughter that I created, and they're staying safe in their life. How wonderful. They're not making mistakes. They have a nice, cozy little job. But there's no life there. And then he says, but can't you hear the wild? It's calling you. So it's almost like no matter where we are in our life, if we would just but listen, the wild is calling us. It's calling us to go find and live our purpose, to step out into these things, into these experiences. One of the things that is very evident through this entire poem is that we learn through the experiences, but we have to get out of the known and go have experiences so that we can learn. You're never going to get the understanding that you want till you step out in the experience. And then he closes it this way. Let us probe the silent places. So we're seeking, we're looking, we're searching. Let us seek what luck betides us. Let us journey to a lonely land I know. That's interesting. The I here can represent a lot of things. It could represent the author. It could represent the soul. It could represent the person who has, any person who has gone before us and saying, come this direction. But I think what's very interesting about this poem is that there's a few things in life. You'll see it sometimes in movies. You definitely see it in literature. You very much can see it in certain songs, in music, where there's a conversation that's taking place. And spirit is actually speaking to the soul with and through that thing. So this is a poem. And personally, I think that's what this is. I think that this is basically like a download from Robert Williams Service. And what it really is that it's spirit speaking to the individual soul, the person that is fortunate enough to get a hold of this and read it. Because every person that reads it is going to interpret it their own way, and that's perfectly fine. It's written in a way that's designed to speak to the internal fire in your own soul. And then he ends it. There's a whisper on the night wind. So it's quiet. It's not loud, but it's consistently sending you this message. And he talks about the night, right? So what do we know about the night? It's dark. It's unknown. There's a peacefulness about it. It's all supposed to be the time that we're asleep. So that's interesting. Then he says, there's a star agleam to guide us. So even in the darkest times of our life, when we're asleep, there is a light somewhere that is shining to guide you. He said, and the wild is calling, calling, let us go. So here he brings it down like there's nothing else. Just get up and go. There's no explanation, there's no story, there's no excuse, there's no reason, just, you don't need anything else, just get up and go. What does that mean? Get up and start the business. Get up and live your life. Get up and leave the bad marriage. Get up and explore an amazing love with someone. Get up and go travel. Get up and go live your life. I hope you find this as fascinating and as entertaining and as rich as I do. Thank you very much. Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more,
go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.